I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Swinging a high drive into center field. It's at the wall. It is gone. Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied.
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high. It's deep. It's back. It's gone. Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over.
All right, let's go play Tessie, episode 256. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Remember to rate us 5 stars. We really appreciate it. You can find us on WEEI's YouTube channel. You can subscribe there. Hit the thumbs up on all our videos. We've got the play Tessie playlist there, so super easy to find everything. Hit the 5-star or hit the thumbs up and then find us on the socials at play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Just go to one Pat here today. No Sammy, but the Sox coming off two back-to-back wins since last time we talked. We were coming off 3 out of 4 against the Yankees, but always those podcasts are weird when you're happy about the series, happy about everything, but they lose the last game and it's like a weird taste on your tongue. But this time it's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. You had two very different games, two very different starts, middles, ends, but in the end, it's the same outcome. The Sox win the ball games. And that's kind of been the way this team has been since June, July. Like they've shown you they can win games in different ways. And I mean, whether it be yesterday, piecing it together with the bullpen and they all performed super well, whether it be on the mound, all of them pitched well, but you obviously had the Steven Matz play and the Bregman tag, like it was just a well fought, hard fought win. And then today, just an absolute pitching masterclass from Lucas Giolito. And it just, whenever the Red Sox have Crochet, Bayo, or Giolito on the mound, you know you've got a damn good chance to win that game. And that's not to say they don't have a good chance to win the other games too, because like the first game of the series, it was a Bernardino open game. And Fitz came in and he gave you 4, and it was up and down, but he gave you 4, and he held them at bay, and then the rest of the pen brought you home. But yeah, I mean, you feel great when your horses are on the mound, and when they're not, you find ways to win, and that's kind of just been what this team has been doing. I mean, I know they've had like 1 or 2 kind of rough stretches since they got hot originally over the summer, but I mean, for the most part, it's just they show up and they take care of business, and they're 5-1 on this road trip. We talk about wanting this home playoff series because of the difference between home and road. Well, they're showing you. The Yankees are the Yankees, and the Orioles have been one of the better teams in baseball for the better part of 2 months now. And so far, 2 games in the series, you've taken care of business. Crochet and Bayo and Crochet coming up next. Like, you got to feel good about it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think getting to Sagano when they did, I mean, obviously roping off the jump, but that was a guy who kind of took their lunch money last time, if I remember correctly. Yep. So making the adjustments, knocking them around, getting the win there, and kind of just piecing that entire game together, really. Because you had Bernie open, you had Fitz, who was okay, then got hurt, and then Matz comes in, and then, I mean, Whitlock and Chapman right now is as automatic as it gets. Durant with the go-ahead bomb. Like, pretty much what was basically a humongous just clusterfuck was pieced together to be a win. Today was the opposite. You had your true starter, you had Giolito, who's been, for probably a month now, it seems like every other, like, good start, bad start in a way, was phenomenal tonight as we record. Punch out to end it, 8 innings. I believe it was 4 hits, 1 walk.
I think you're right, yeah. Eight Ks.
Location was phenomenal all night. He was painting down low with the fastball, which makes that like diving changeup so much better in the bottom of the zone, which he got away with a ton tonight. Looked awesome. Story had the early home run after Kyle Bradish came out and looked like prime Max Scherzer. But yeah, I mean, today's a big win. Tomorrow, you got to feel good. Bayo on the bump tomorrow. game three. Things are starting to pick up. Like, these are all important games. They have been for a couple of weeks now. And just, you can't get mad with them handling business. All you can do is good job, move on to the next one. And that's kind of where we're at. You got to be happy.
Yeah. And I mean, you talk about all these games being important. Like, the Yankees have the Nationals right now, and they have one of the easier schedules in the game outside of, what did we, was there like a 12-ish game stretch? Was that
the Yankees? Yeah. So they go Nats for three. So they're finishing up game two right now. They have a lead. But they have the Nats for three, White Sox for three. And then the order might not be right, but then their next 12 games are Houston, Detroit, Toronto, us.
Right. But, like, you've got the Nats and the White Sox right now and with for the Yankees. And let's say the Red Sox don't pull off the first game of the series and they lose that game. Now you're behind the Yankees for the first wild card spot. The Mariners, I mean, they haven't started their second game of the series. It'll be an interesting one. I might go and watch that after we finish up. Castillo versus Cease, that's a good one. But they win last night. They looked like they were going to lose early. They were down. Tatis hit a bomb. They're down 4-1. And then all of a sudden, they just go nuclear, score a ton of runs. Like, these are good teams you're fighting with. Like, you're fighting for the top wild card spot, like the top non-division winning team. Like, I know we talk about how weak the AL is, but the truth is, the top of the AL has kind of separated itself from the bottom. Like, the Royals, as we talk right now, they're down to the White Sox right now. If they lose that game, the Red Sox are going to be six games ahead of them. Like, the Red Sox are going to the playoffs. So it's not about that anymore. And you can kind of see the borderline where you've got the three division leaders and you got the three wildcard teams, and then you got everyone else. So those teams, the teams that you need to lose, and whether you can pay attention to Houston too, because they might not win that division. The Mariners could win that division, but those teams that you need to lose aren't going to lose games often. Like, they're just going to win these games. So you have to be better than them. Like, it's not going to, like, early in the season, it was enough to just be okay. And that's how the Red Sox were kind of able to hang around a little bit while they found their footing. And eventually they did find it, but they were never super far out of it just because the AL was bad. But, you know, after the trade deadline, what happens? These teams, like the Mariners, they go get a whole new offense. The Yankees, they get a whole new bullpen. Like, the Astros get Carlos Correa. Like, these teams, it happens every year. The teams that go nuts, they separate themselves. And the Red Sox, I mean, they may not have added as much at the deadline like some of these other teams did, but they've added talent, and they're certainly getting better. And they've got more coming in terms of guys getting healthy. Like, we talked about it on the last podcast, sort of thinking that, like, Ref Snyder, Slayton, and Abreu were due back any day. And so far, none of them have returned, but it kind of seems like two of them could be back either, if you're listening today or tomorrow. So Abreu's a little bit delayed, but the Red Sox roster is getting, it has been consistently getting to a better place. So you have to feel good about it, but you have to win the winnable games. That's just the way it's going to be for the rest of the way. And you got to give them credit, because the first game of the series, and let's get into it, that game was not necessarily looking like a game that was going to be super winnable. Down 3-1.
Nope.
Richard Fitz in the game, and he struggled early. Like, Bernie got through the first inning, but Fitz came in and he had that really, I forget if it was his second inning of work. Was it the third inning where he loaded the bases on, like, walks and a hit by pitch? Like,
I think so.
And he just didn't look like he had it. You weren't hitting much. Sagano, as you said, Pat, like, he got the best of the Sox the first time out, and, you know, he was looking okay outside of the Roman leadoff homer, which, Roman Anthony, the youngest Red Sox player ever to hit a leadoff homer. But when you've got an opportunity to cash in like they did in the fifth inning, and Jaren Duran does it, and in our group chat, Pat, we've been talking a lot about Jaren Duran not coming through and in these clutch moments. He sure as shit did it there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you isolate it to late game clutch, different story, but doesn't matter. I mean, he came through yesterday when they really needed it. And then, not that I completely ruled them out when it was 3-1, but just with, like, how Sagano's pitched to them and how they played the Orioles last week, you can't say you were overly confident then coming back and winning that game.
No, of course not. No. And we've seen it, you know, this team fights, but there's been, I don't know, maybe it's just because we're 160, like, we watch every single game. And, like, most of the time when you're down multiple runs, you're not going to win the game. But, like, mentally, like, you get into those games, and whether it be because it's a bullpen game, because they weren't necessarily hitting yet, like, yeah, it didn't get, you didn't have the feel of one of those games where it's like, okay, this one's not over until it's over. And then all of a sudden you blink and they're up 4-3 and they just never looked back.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, don't get like, there's definitely been like 21 a little bit, 2018, obviously, like there are teams where like, no matter what the deficit is, you're like, I feel really good. I'm not at that point with this team yet. And I'm not sure I ever will be, but I'm also at the point where it's, I can't rule them out. Because they show fight. Even if they don't come all the way back and win, it's always a fight. Like there's been very, very few games where they've been trailing after, we'll say like 7, and they're just like dead. Like there's no fight. Yeah. 1-2-3, 1-2-3.
They don't get blown out.
Which is encouraging. Yeah. And that's like the exact fight that you need once the playoffs roll around. Because as we all know, like the ups and downs of a playoff baseball game are, they'll take years off your life.
Yeah.
So the fact that they're showing the fight that they do in June, July, August, it's encouraging because this is a team that you absolutely have to believe can win a playoff series, can win multiple playoff series.
Definitely. Yeah. No, it's not a team. Their whole MO is not, oh, we're the comeback kids. We're going to go down, but we're going to, that's not this team. But that said, this team, like, think about how frequently do you ever watch a game and it's like, okay, it's the fourth inning. This one's probably done. We'll watch the, like, it doesn't, those games don't happen. Like, the Red Sox will blow teams out. They'll win tight games and they'll lose tight games, but they don't get blown out. They don't. And that's honestly, like, especially earlier in the year where they were losing so many close games, like, that, they found pockets to rest some of these relievers, but some of these guys were getting so taxed because whether the games were won or lost, like you were having to pitch your best relievers and you know, credit to Giolito today and credit to the bats and credit to Dylan Beavers too, I guess, for not, Giolito kind of kept Whitlock out of the game, and then Dylan Beavers and the Orioles defense kept Chapman out of it. Like any obviously wins are important, but if Giolito can only go 7 and the Red Sox can't blow this thing open, now you've got Whitlock and Chapman having gone back to back, and you're kind of entering the same situation you were in the third game of the Yankee series, where obviously it didn't come into play. They won 12-1, but you're thinking, okay, how are we going to close this game? It's like the Sunday Marlins game where you enter the ninth, you're up 3-2. They wanted to stay away from Chapman. It doesn't work. But let's get back to the first game. Let's go. Let's talk Richard Fitz a little bit here. Because he had kind of an up and down outing. The strikeout stuff was there. He struck out 6 in 4 innings. The line was 4 innings, 2 hits. One of those was a home run. 3 earned runs, 3 walks, 6 strikeouts. So the walks were there. He had the home run. He allowed 3 earned. Settled down towards the end. It was looking more promising, and that's why I think they threw him out there for a fifth. And when you listen to him talk after the game, it was kind of like, yeah, like I knew something maybe wasn't necessarily all the way right, but I wanted to go out there for my team. And then I threw one pitch in that inning and I knew, oh man, it's not right. But overall, before that, it was up and down. Like in my head, I was thinking, man, like, you know, the Orioles have all these lefties, probably should have called on Kyle Harrison for this one. But I mean, in the end, he did settle in. I don't know how much you can take away from it because he got put on the IL and you can talk about his injury. We really don't know that much about it, but I mean, the fact that he settled down, I guess, was encouraging.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the fact that, you know, he 8 innings, settled in a little bit. And then, I mean, Steven Matz has been nothing short of exceptional since he's got here. And that was a trade that I don't think really any of us were over the moon about. It was more like, oh, yeah, like depth is good. His splits are good against lefties. But he's been a lot more than that. He's been a legit weapon out of the pen, which is huge. But as far as Fitz goes, arm neuritis does like nothing for me.
In terms of what?
In terms of what it is. It's basically like, I know you're not a hockey guy, but player gets hit, it's like, oh, lower body. Like
it okay, just so does, you're, like, you're saying that, yeah. You're saying that neuritis doesn't tell you shit about what's actually going on.
So the neuritis just means like nerve inflammation. There's some kind of like nerve injury, whether it be, you know, like a traction or whatever it is. But like arm neuritis does like nothing for me without what nerve it is. Like, was it his ulnar nerve? Was it medial? Like, there's like 1,000 different nerves it could be.
Are there nerves in the bicep? Because they originally said bicep soreness, I think it was bicep something. And are there nerves in there?
So you're so all sit. Everyone, sit down. Turn up the radio. Little anatomy lesson for everybody.
Yeah, please. Let's get deep. So, let's get sciencey here.
Okay. So basically, your entire C spine. So your neck, the cervical part of your vertebrae. In between all of those, you have discs. Off the discs come all the nerve bundles. So from your neck, the nerves that come from your neck innervate everything that goes down your arms. Everything in your body comes from your spine. That being said, there's a 10, 12, there's so many nerves that could be anywhere down the arm. That's more my point. Like, is it a super whatever nerve? Is it a small nerve? Is it something like his ulnar nerve? If it's the ulnar nerve, then this is a different conversation. That could be something a little bit more scary. But the way he sounded and the way that the team's kind of reacting doesn't sound like it's anything pressing. Right. So I'm not super, super worried about it. But I don't really know what it is.
Yeah. And if Sammy were here, what he would say is that the Red Sox, and he's right when he says this, he would say that the Red Sox make every injury sound like it's a minor thing at first. Oh, maybe he'll avoid an IL stint. Then he's on the IL. But oh, it's probably going to be a minimum stint. And then he's out for a lot longer. And that's the truth. Like with Justin Slayton, he got put on the IL and we were told, yeah, probably a minimum stint. Turns out they had no idea what was wrong with him. He's out multiple months. With Abreu, we were told, yeah, like might miss the two-game Orioles series, but back for the Yankees series. Then all of a sudden, he's on the 10-day IL. Oh, minimum stay. And then all of a sudden, it's going to be a little bit more into next week. So you can't always trust what the team and sometimes even the player says, because Willier was pretty optimistic about it and he's down. Fitz seemed pretty optimistic. And to be honest with you, I'll still read into it positively just because like when a pitcher throws a pitch and then starts looking at their arm in their forearm area, like, and I know it was the bicep eventually, or at least so they said, but that at this point in the year, when you're in late August, like that screams season ender. And you could be sitting there thinking, oh, okay, like the Sox have a few options for the five starter, not the biggest deal. Like to me, Richard Fitz has a chance to be a weapon out of this bullpen, if not the number five starter on this team the rest of the way. So it is impactful. He is on the injured list. We don't know a whole lot. Like hopefully he's getting another opinion when they get back to Boston. So I guess we'll find out more then whenever he speaks, or maybe Cora will say something about it. But I guess that can sort of lead us into where we can let's go there. And then we'll come back to the game.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
On Tuesday, August 26th, it's FanDuel Futures Day, a new holiday for football fans. It's 24 hours of deals on all your football season predictions. So take a flyer on the MVP race. Who's your pick for the crown? You think it'll be Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes? Who do you think's going to win the Super Bowl? You going Eagles? You going Chiefs? You going someone else? You could also parlay your division winner dark horses. Mark your calendars. This is your day for your hunches, your hot takes, your calls, and your odds. Visit the FanDuel app today and start playing your futures bets now, because Future Day is one day and one day only. FanDuel, play your game. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. For Kansas, in affiliation with Kansas City Star Casino, or 18 plus and present in D.C., Kentucky, or Wyoming. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG. Call 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut or visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The Red Sox need a starter for Saturday. There's no off day in between now and then, so they can't shorten the rotation. They have to do something, and maybe the solution is what they did with Fitz, where it's like, yeah, like we'll open and then someone goes four innings or so. Like we try for a bulk outing, but not like a full start. And then we kick it to the bullpen. It is the Pirates, one of the worst offenses in the league. So hopefully you can get through it. But to me, the one thing that obviously means something is that today as we record, so Tuesday night, Kyle Harrison pitched. He threw 38 pitches. If it were me, like it seems like they're lining him up to do something on Saturday. If it were me, what I would have done is inserted Kyle Harrison against Baltimore, where most of their hitters are their best hitters are all lefties, and pushed everyone back a day, give everyone a day of rest. Like Kyle Harrison needed to pitch anyway. Like you're not going to sit him for 10 days and expect things to go well on Saturday. But also like throwing him 38 pitches today and then expecting him to go Saturday also isn't necessarily setting him up for success. So maybe if you threw him in the game tomorrow, push Bayo back a day and then Crochet versus Skeens on Friday would be the electric factory. Obviously that's not what they did, so we don't need to go there. But do you think this is kind of pointing to Kyle Harrison, or do you think maybe there's an outside the box option? Like that Cora said they hadn't talked about Peyton Tolley, but with the way he looked in his last start, like to me he is big league starting pitcher depth at this point. Like I know we've talked about him as a reliever option for at least a few weeks now, but to me, I mean, he's in AAA, he's starting and he's pitching great. He's pitching better than anyone else at AAA. So why not consider it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say taking Kyle Harrison out today, 38 pitches is like the end all be all sure thing. It's Saturday. I think they're not stupid. I think they want to keep all their options open as they should. Like they really have to weigh out. Is it worth rushing Tolley, if you want to call it rushing him? Is it worth kind of halting Kyle Harrison's development with his new arsenal? Like there's a lot to go into the decision. I don't think it's as clear cut as a lot of people would like to think. I do still lean toward Kyle Harrison over Peyton Tolley, and it's not a talent thing. I think it's just Kyle Harrison's been in the majors before. He's looked really good this past month or so. Walks have been an issue, but I believe he's struck out 24 in 23 innings this month. He's walked 11, 2.35 ERA.
Last couple outings, walks have been a little bit better. He only walked one in his three innings today. I forget it was one or two last start, but it's been a little bit better. But you are right. Like the walks have been kind of the one thing holding him back. As obviously as he learns a new arsenal, like he's learning the feel for all of his pitches together, and it's not going to come overnight. Like the Kyle Harrison that you see if they start him is not going to be the Kyle Harrison that hopefully we're going to see next year as he has a whole offseason to get everything together.
Yeah. So I still would lean Harrison. I think Harrison's the most likely. But like I wouldn't rule out like Criswell. Criswell for spot start if Fitz is going to be a quick IL.
Isn't Criswell still on the IL, or did he?
He
had an elbow thing. So I bet I don't think there's. Yeah, I think he's definitely.
Is he still on? Okay.
I think he got put on recently. And if it's an elbow, there's no way that's a minimum.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it probably lines up to be Harrison on Saturday. But, damn, dude, it's so hard not to be chomping at the bit for Peyton Tolley.
And I wouldn't fault them either which way. Like, legitimately, the only, like, I would say Harrison is my obvious pick, if not for just how weird this whole schedule for him is. Like, he's been in the minors for quite a bit now in a new organization, and, like, you have this vision as a kid in the minor leagues waiting to get that call to the majors of how it's going to go. And obviously, you know, as these guys, especially the pitchers, you know, they're big league depth when you're starting games in AAA. So it's not necessarily always going to be pretty. Like you're not going to know 3-4 days in advance, like, hey, your next start is at Fenway Park. Like, no, in a lot of scenarios, it could be something like this where it's like, hey, we're going to keep your pitch count down. Be ready to go. You may not go. Like, I'm sure he thought there was a good chance he was going to start Monday, and then it didn't happen. Like, they scratched him from his start Sunday to be ready for Monday, and then he wasn't needed. And it's like, okay, now you're going Tuesday. It's got to be tough. Like, imagining being in that spot, how much goes in. Like, think about it. Like, when you were in high – or no, you – honestly, Pat, you were in school way more recently than I was. You were in – what was it, 2 years ago you finished school? Or is it 1 year ago?
Last May of 24.
So think about it. It's like the night before a final exam. And then they tell you, oh, actually, your finals getting pushed to the next day. So now, but you already had your kind of sleepless, like, anxiety night. Now you got another one. And then, but actually this final is going to be twice as hard, but then actually, no, never mind. And it'd be a huge opportunity for you. Cause if you do really well in it, like, you could go play, I don't know. But then now you've got to have another sleepless night because they pushed you another day. And now they're telling you, okay, you're going to do a third of the final. And then in 3 days, you're going to do the full final of the super hard one. Like, that, it's just a lot, and it's a lot going on. But they may not have a choice. Like, it all depends on how comfortable they would be starting Tolley, because he's approaching 100 innings for the year. Like, they may just not want to start him for very much longer. And if that's the case, you probably shouldn't start him in the majors.
I could comfortably say you have the weirdest fucking analogies. Like, what was that?
I'm just saying, like, the anxiety that you have before a big test.
Yes. Yeah. No. I get that the test analogy. Got
messed around and the times got moved around and, like, maybe it's a different subject matter. Like, it could really fuck with your head. And, like, I'm sure it did fuck with him.
Yes, I agree. I think it's kind of like caught in a limbo in a way. Because you're like, all right, I'm probably going to get the call. You don't get the call. And it's like, actually, you're going to start on Tuesday, but we're going to kind of reel you in a little bit just to kind of keep the door open. It's a weird spot to be in, and I get that. But, it's just my whole thing with Tolley is, like, you already kind of alluded to it. He's coming up on 100 innings. It's a weird spot to be in. I think if he comes up at all, it's as a reliever just to kind of limit the innings he does see. But I had a more, I guess it's a question, but Cora saying that they haven't talked about names specifically.
Lies.
There's no way. There's no way. Lies. I'm not calling Alex Cora a liar. I'm just calling him a bad fibber. Because there's no shot that Craig Breslow, Alex Cora, Andrew Bailey, whoever else. There is no way between Walker coming out of the rotation, Fitz getting hurt, all this stuff. There's no way you can look me in the eye and say they have not discussed Peyton Tolley by name as a possibility, either for the bullpen or that fifth rotation spot. You can't do it because he's been that good. Look what the Mets did today. Mets brought up Jonah Tong.
Yeah, like, same exact situation.
Same exact situation. So there's other teams in the league doing it. The password promotion came out of nowhere. So I think if Tolley gets called up, it's going to be one of those things. Like, it's just kind of like such and such is being discussed. I think it's going to be like, oh, shit, they just called up Peyton Tolley. But yeah, I mean, to say that they haven't discussed it, and it's not a good, I won't give it a great, but a good possibility, I it's a lie. There's no way.
Well, if Tolley's not in the discussion, then your only options, unless you're like calling up Tyler Uberstein, I don't even know what his schedule is right now.
Yeah.
It's Kyle Harrison, or it's putting Walker Buehler back in the rotation when you just said bullpen for the rest of the year, and then in his one bullpen outing, he wasn't even good.
Yeah. Oh, dude. If Peyton Tolley's not an option, announce Kyle Harrison right now.
Yeah, it is.
It's between the two of them. It's between the two of them. It is.
We're not doing the Buehler thing anymore. Like,
no.
I think it should be more of a question about should he be DFA'd to make room for Justin Slayton, more than it should be a conversation, could Walker Buehler get us through the Pirates start? Because the last thing we need is someone who just got demoted to the bullpen. Now he's getting put back in the rotation. He already had like major confidence issues and hasn't shown any signs of improvement. Granted, he's only had one outing. Like, it's just a bad recipe. And not that it means anything, but Kyle Harrison in his career, he has pitched against the Pirates once. It was last year in April. He did go 6 shutout, 5 hits, no walks, 7 Ks. So I probably doesn't mean shit. He's a different pitcher than he was then. They're a different team than they were then. They're a worse team than they were then. But I feel fine about Kyle Harrison. I just, like, literally it's just the fact that he threw 38 pitches tonight and it's going to be 3 days rest. If it was a normal schedule, by God, I would have started Kyle Harrison against the Orioles and had him go against a team that has trouble with lefties and then the Pirates to start his Red Sox career. Like, I would have thought that would have been ideal. But, I mean, you got to start somewhere, have him go here, and then if it goes well, or even if it doesn't go well, like, you give him a couple of shots at it and see how it goes. Because I honestly think he'll be – like, I think people I understand why they're nervous about it, because clearly he's not a finished product right now, but I think people will be surprised. I mean, this guy's pitched, I believe it's 39 major league games. Like, he's been a big leaguer.
Yeah.
And he's capable of getting major league outs. Like, this guy's not some schmuck. Like, he's the former top left-handed pitching prospect in baseball for a reason.
Yeah. I think the other thing with Harrison, too, if it does end up being Harrison on Saturday, I think it's more of like a bulk opener kind of thing. Just because it's a weird rest, because he threw 40. It's 3 days rest.
Yeah, he's not going full. Everything full,
like 90, I could see him going, you know, 60 pitches. Whether that translates to three or four innings, I think like 60 pitches is a good number.
Yeah.
And then if he shows he can handle it, Fitz is still hurt, then you give him a normal start 5 days later. That's just how they're going to have to do it, which isn't a bad idea. But yeah, I in my head, it comes down to Tolley versus Harrison for who starts Saturday. And it's going to be Harrison.
Yeah, because another thing too, I mean, obviously you're going to run into the issue with needing to add Tolley if he's coming up to be a reliever anyway, but you do need to find a 40-man spot.
When does Tolley pitch again?
He went on Thursday. No, he went on Friday. He went on Friday. So he's scheduled for Thursday.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would be a couple extra. I mean, it would make sense.
Something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I don't think anyone should rule it out. And the fact that Cora said they haven't talked about it. He didn't say
which
no.
Which is crazy. Yeah.
But the thing is, like, with Cora speak, like, the two guys that we're talking about is Tolley, who he said that they haven't talked about, and Harrison, who he has called an option but didn't sound overly confident in him. Like, he talked about, oh, he's been, like, kind of inconsistent up and down. He's got the stuff. So it's not like he's given a ton of hints. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, Cora's never been like that. It was, like, the same thing.
Like, sometimes he'll be like, no, we're not considering that. That's crazy. Like, the fact that he didn't say that about Tolley tells you that he's an option.
That's the thing with Cora. It's always breadcrumb trail of non-answers. Because he said the same thing about, who was it? It was Roman at one point. He kind of said something about Marcelo at one point. Like, whenever he gives like non answers and doesn't say like flat out no, or we don't like that right now. Like, anytime
I'll give you an example, Pat. When he was asked about Christian Campbell recently, he made it pretty clear that Christian Campbell wasn't coming up with the current landscape of the roster.
Yes, and then earlier in the season when they asked about his struggles and the possibility of him going down,
yeah, he left it right on the table.
Yes,
and then he went down.
He did say no. Yes. Yep.
It's almost like, and this is relevant because in my household, like, Taylor Swift is a big deal. So
fuck Taylor Swift.
You're a good thing you're in my headphones and not out loud. But it's like my wife reads into every single little thing that she does, and you have to like read so far outside the lines, and it's like it gets to the point where it's borderline psychotic how her fans read into every little thing that she does. But that's like almost how you have to operate with Corey. He's not going to tell you. He's going to give you a puzzle, and it's your job to put it together. And right now, the puzzle, you can't put together a complete puzzle right now. But like, you do know, like, you know some of the pieces. You know generally where they're going to go. It's just, we know the two options, so we think. I'm not considering Buehler as a third option. I'm just not going there.
Yeah, I'm not either. And the other thing too is, even if, let's say they go Bernie again as an opener, you still need a bulk guy that day. So it's still probably going to be one of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, even opener, not opener, like, whether it's Tolley, Harrison, whatever, like, you're almost certainly not getting five innings with the fact that Tolley they've been winding him down. And then with Harrison, he's on 38 pitches, 3 days rest. So we'll see what happens. Maybe they say something. I don't know. Like, they're going to have to announce something at some point. But for now, focusing on the rest of the series, you've got your two best guys. And a legitimate opportunity to four-game sweep the Orioles on the road if those guys can do what they did last time out against the Yankees. But let's get back to the game before we get to the second game of the series, because you briefly brought up Steven Matz. We do need to talk a little bit about just how good he's been. He's pitched 9 games since getting to the Red Sox, 10 and a third innings. He went 2 scoreless in this game, made the awesome, awesome defensive play to throw the nubber to third base, get the out there. That's the tying run with no outs. That play, the ump blew the call at first. Good on them for overturning it. That was the play of the game. Well, outside of the Duran homer, that was the play of the game that saved the game. He's 10 and a third innings, one earned run. The only earned run was off that homer from Marcy on a pitch that was a ball and a half off the plate. He has an 0.87 ERA. Like, when Justin Slayton gets back, and you can have Chapman, Whitlock, Slayton, Mats as your back four. Like, when you watch team, like the Red Sox other Red Sox fans have been watching some of these other teams in the postseasons recently deploy these ridiculous bullpens with these young flamethrowers. It's like, oh my God, this guy had like an 0.87 ERA the last 2 months of the season. Like, that's where the Red Sox bullpen is right now. You've got Whitlock, who's got an 0.48 in his last 21 appearances. Chapman, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think if I remember correctly, it's an 0.03 in his last 30. He hasn't allowed a hit in a month, plus 13 straight outings. You've got Slayton, who I think we're going to see the Justin Slayton of old when he's back, and you've got Mats, who's been this since he's gotten here. Like, he does add another dynamic to this bullpen that I agree, Pat. Like, we didn't quite see it when he got here, but he really has been that. And to get two innings out of him in this game in that spot with a one-run lead was huge.
Yeah. He's been phenomenal since he got here. One name that you didn't say, and this just goes to show the incredible back-end depth that they're going to have once Slayton gets back, Weissert becomes expandable. That's a guy who is your setup guy for the past 3 months. Like, to have a back-end of, realistically, you could argue it's a 6-7-8-9. That is what you have in Weissert, Mats, Whitlock, Slayton, and Chapman. Like, you can, pending, you know, health, pitching, how they should, you can shorten games to 5-6 innings on a given night. So that in the playoffs is so, you can't even put into words how important that is. Just, and especially with this day and age, like, they're not forcing their hand with starting pitching. It's normal for a starting pitcher to go 3 2/3, 4 1/3, 4 2/3. Like, these short starts, just get it to the bullpen, get it to the arms that can handle it, happens so often. And to be able to have those arms that you can just kind of throw out there and have trust in, it's massive. And Steven Matz, apologies. We thought you were some form of, you know, starter can't get it done, depth middle inning reliever. He's been utterly dominant. He's had literally one bad game since he's been here. Outside of that, he's been incredible.
Yeah, and even the bad game, like, I can't say that a guy hitting a home run on a ball that far off the plate is necessarily his fault. Like, he's been that guy, and it's weird because the Red Sox just haven't had good bullpens for the majority of, like, our time watching this team. They just haven't had those super bullpens, and I'm not calling this bullpen a super pen, but if you get to a playoff game, and let's say, like, because Giolito, as you said, he's kind of been going every other right now. And like tonight, he was absolutely phenomenal. Against the Yankees, it was about 4 innings. If you get 4 innings out of him, and I mean, use the Yankee game as an example. Like, the bullpen took that game and ran with it. And they, in the first game of the series, they took that game and they ran with it. Like, you can put the bullpen in this game in the fourth or fifth inning, and, you know, you piece an inning together with Weissert and Wilson eating one, and then you've got the other four guys where multiple of those guys are capable of going two if needed. Like, there's the possibilities are endless. Like, it just, obviously, I'm not saying it makes Cora's job easy per se, but it, like, there's a lot less chance. Like, you're going to look good as a manager when, regardless of who you put in, you're going to feel good about it. Whereas, you know, I remember at this time last year, like, maybe a little bit earlier, but you lost Slayton. You lost Chris Martin for a period of time. Kenley Jansen couldn't be used in Colorado, and there was practically no one to turn to for Cora. And you've got a bunch of fans saying, "Oh my God, he doesn't know what he's doing." Well, actually, it's because he has no one to turn to. Now he's got everyone to turn to. It doesn't matter. These guys are all going to get the job done. And I don't know of a time, maybe since like the Daniel Bard, Jonathan Papelbon eighth and ninth, maybe for a period there, Tozawa leading to Uehara. But like, Tozawa never did what Whitlock is doing right now. Like, the eighth and ninth innings being as automatic as they've been with Chapman, or with Whitlock and then Chapman, it's unbelievable how unbothered might be the wrong word, because I mean, I'm neurotic about the Red Sox. Like, I'm always going to watch them stressed out when the game is close. But like, I don't feel nervous that they're going to lose the game when they enter the eighth inning with a one-run lead. The second they get there, eighth inning, one-run lead, like, it's practically curtains. Lately, it has been curtains.
Yeah, and I knew, as good as the 2018 2018 team was. Kimbrel was obviously incredible that year. 274, 42 saves, whatever. They didn't even have a great setup guy. They didn't. Hector Velasquez was getting looks every now and then. He was okay. Joe Kelly had a 4-4 that year.
Matt Barnes was it, Pat. You get to the playoffs and Joe Kelly did it. Like, it was a ragtag. Yeah. It was ragtag until Joe Kelly snapped his fingers in the playoffs and became that guy.
Yeah, and I think I would lean to Tozawa and Uehara as the most recent, like, dominant. I mean, Bard and Papelbon was just...
That was fun.
It was just unreal. That was fun. But, yeah, like, it's so nice to have an 8-9 punch. It's so nice. Because, like, we haven't had it in so long.
Yeah, and Whitlock allows that leadoff double, and Gunnar Henderson's on second, like, emphatically clapping, like, here we go. And then for him to just... He's so calm on the mound. It just never shows emotion. And to just calmly strike out, strike out, strike out, walks off the mound as if nothing happened. It's like, dude, like, you just daddied them, dude. You daddied their shit. Like, it was awesome. It was awesome. And then Chapman, it was like, what, 7 or 8 pitches. Didn't even need to strike anyone out. It was just easy. Still didn't allow a hit. So you feel great about them. And, you know, obviously, you don't want to pitch them too much. So that's why today Giolito doing what he did. And we can get into that real quick before we can talk about this game too. And then we'll go to enough said. But Giolito, 8 innings. Going 8 innings in a 3-0 game at the time allowed you to save Whitlock. And then obviously they scored the runs and it saved Chapman. But I mean, his fastball was up a tick today and his changeup was down a tick. And doing that together, like, it shows you just like how effective it can be. When he's doing that, when Giolito touches 94 and 95, like, I texted you guys in the first inning, Giolito touched 95, it's going to be a good night. Like, when you see him touch 95, he's a different guy. And he's still capable of getting outs and putting together good outings, sitting 92, 93. Like, we saw it against the Marlins. Like, the velocity wasn't great. He might have gotten hit up a little bit, but he still got the job done. I believe that one was 6 innings or 7 innings, 1 run. This time, it was just they could not touch him. The changeup was unbelievable. Swing and miss galore. 8 strikeouts. Like, they had one man on second base, I believe, his entire time pitching, if I'm not mistaken, or was it 2?
I think it was first and second at one point, yeah.
They had first and second, and he got 2 big outs, including a Gunnar Henderson K. In his last inning, did someone reach second base?
I believe so, yeah.
So, okay, then that would have been 2. But, like, I mean, it was just... They never truly had a chance.
Yeah. And I kind of was talking about it earlier, but it's kind of weird how you can tell if it's going to be a good Lucas Giolito outing based on the first inning alone. It's always the fastball velo in the command. If he's hitting 94, 95, and he's painting both high and low in the first inning, there's a really good shot that he's going to just deal all night. It's when he's 92, 93, changeups down, fastballs out or up, like, those are the ones that he tends to really struggle through because his slider and curveball aren't super reliable. He's super it's reliable pitches.
It is all dependent on the fastball changeup. Everything goes around those 2 pitches for him.
Yeah, and especially too, one thing that he's done a really good job in the good starts lately is he is so fastball changeup heavy that in 0-2 or 1-2 counts, guys are probably hunting changeup, and that's when he kind of flips in the curve. And it's just enough where either they'll see it down in the zone and take it, fastball up, next pitch, they're done. Like, it's when he can sequence and locate, he's incredible. It's when he's really fighting with no command, no feel for the change.
It's the command. It's the command, yeah.
Those are the things that really kind of digs him a hole that he can't really get out of at points.
The curveball is weird. Like, he pulled it out in the first inning today. I'd have to go back and look, but I'm pretty sure he pulled it out in the first inning against the Yankees too. It's weird because you're right, he doesn't go to it. But I don't know. I really don't understand. Like, I'm not even saying it's bad. And it's good that I don't understand it because maybe it means they don't understand it. But I mean, to go back to his changeup, after his start against the Yankees, Bregman came up to him and told him, hey, like, I'm pretty sure they had your changeup tonight. Like, they know when you're throwing it, you're tipping your changeup. They work on some things. Like, obviously the Orioles didn't have his changeup tonight. Like, they had nothing. They had nothing on them tonight. And just goes to show you the value of a guy like Alex Bregman. But also, I mean, Julie, it's not like he had an off day. Like, this is 4 days rest. Like, this isn't full rotation plus a day off. He had the minimum time to get back out there, and for him to do what he did tonight was awesome, and it was everything this team needed, and it set them up to potentially win one or two more games, to potentially win two more games in this series. You got to feel good about it.
Yeah. I mean, two down, two to go. Chapman and Whitlock both rested. Bayo tomorrow. And then Crochet, yeah?
Bayo, then Crochet. Yeah, Crochet in the finale versus Cade Povich, who I think it was him. He was posting on Twitter. I know he hasn't had a good year, but I guess, like, I don't know. People have been sending his wife some shit. I don't know. Some bad stuff. I forget what it was. He was tweeting about something. Yeah. But people are sending his wife that stuff, then it really must not be going
dude,
well.
Dude, it... In an 8-game road trip, if they go 7-1,
we were upset after a 2-3 homestand, and granted, like, deservedly so. But I mean, they've had their struggles on the road this year. But to go out, I mean, 3 out of 4 against the Yankees is awesome. Orioles are playing good ball too. Like, I really don't. People should not treat this team like a slouch. I know they're not getting Trevor Rogers in this series, but before it gets enough said, shout out Trevor Story, 200th home run. He's just had such a good season. One of the MVPs of this team. I know a lot of people are pushing the Trevor Story for MVP of the 2025 Red Sox agenda, and I'm not going to push back on it. I mean, depends on if you want to include pitchers. I mean, they have maybe the best pitcher in baseball right now, maybe.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Trevor Story has been everything to this team, both on and off the field. Just that stabilizing force, plays every day, which is just... It's been great that he's been able to do that after not being able to do that, and to no fault of his own either. You felt bad from the last few years. It's been the complete opposite. And then it was also good to see David Hamilton crush a ball. Well, we didn't see Hamilton crush a ball, but he did it. He did crush it. The telecast didn't see it. They didn't show us, but he did crush it. I really do wish that I could have gotten a good highlight. I couldn't even tweet the homer because he just couldn't see it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just David Hamilton is like the one guy on the team who I just never know what to expect day to day. Like most of the time, like, he's picked off third, he's striking out looking, and then like the next game he's hitting a shot, diving play at second base, walking, stealing a bat. Like, I won't even call him a frustrating player because I don't expect much, but it's like every game he plays, it's just like a different player's out there. It's the weird, it's Jekyll and, no, have you ever seen the movie Split? With James McAvoy?
It sounds familiar.
I forgot who I'm talking to. Okay.
Hold on. Let me look at like the
cover. I was about to say, Pat, remember who you're asking a movie question to.
Hold on.
Yeah. Joe, have you seen Split? This. Have you seen Split?
I have seen Split.
Okay. That's like what David Hamilton is to me. Like, I never know what personality I'm going to get. It's going to be the guy who goes like 2-for-4 with a home run in a web gem, or it's 0-for-3 with a walk and picked off. Like, it's, I never know what to expect from him. It's the weirdest thing.
All right. But yeah, I agree with you, Pat. And to put a ball on the David Hamilton thing, I've been a believer of David Hamilton as a good bench piece because he plays really good defense. He can make a difference on the base path, whether he's starting and gets on base himself or whether he's pinch running late. And it's really just a matter of, can he hit enough to make it worth it to have those things? And he doesn't really need to do a whole lot. But lately he has been hitting, and low-key, we don't have enough time to talk about it, but so is Connor Wong.
Like, Connor Wong, yeah.
Yeah, like those two dudes have really stepped it up. And, you know, they've taken a lot of shit from this fan base.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And I'm not even saying it's undeserved because, I mean, some of the fuck-ups this year, like that pickoff on third for Hamilton, like, it is deserved. But that's a valuable piece if he can tap into some of what he had in 2024. And it kind of looks like he's doing it right now. And the more he can play, the more you can get Rafaela in center. The more you get Rafaela in center, the better you're looking. Because and another guy we don't really have enough time to talk about right now, but Masataka Yoshida continues to struggle. Do they look to get Hamilton in at second, have your outfield alignment, however you want, and then DH one of the four outfielders? Like, when Willier gets back, like, it's going to be a conversation. The Yoshida conversation will get louder when Willier and Refsnyder are both back on this team. Quick update on the scores, just for quick Pat reaction, because if you're listening, you know what happened already. But the Twins just came all the way back on the Blue Jays. They're up 7-4 in the ninth. And The Mariners are down 5-0 in the first. Luis Castillo got
They're already down 5-0.
Luis Castillo got blasted in the first. So
whoa.
There we go. We got all a right. chance to get some separation on those guys, and if the Twins can close it out, then it would be what, four games behind the Jays for the division? Do I have that right?
I believe so.
Yes.
Because they would be
four games.
21 over, we're 13 over. So four games, yeah.
Yep. All right, Pat, you got enough said before we get out of here?
I do. So shout out. No, opposite of shout out, to be honest with you.
Shout down?
Shout out.
Are you shouting down?
Yeah, I'll shout. Or it would be shouting in.
I don't know. Tell me what you're going to say.
Yeah. So today was roster cutdown day in the NFL. Cole Strange is off this team.
Shout down.
It's a shout down.
So
Bill, that was Bill's last draft pick, first round draft pick. Cole Strange was one of the, and I've been a Pats fan for, like, I vividly remember every draft, I would say the past 15 to 16 years, since I was about 10 years old. Cole Strange, I think, was the one first round pick where I was like, who the fuck?
Yeah.
And then camp, they're like, oh, this kid looks pretty good. And then you got Sean McVay and Les Snead out in LA being like, yeah, we wanted him in the fourth round.
Yeah, laughing their asses off.
like it just seemed like it was either going to be like the cherry on top of Belichick's run, where Cole Strange was like some franchise guard stud, like just insane scouting on his end, or it just totally blows up in his face and this guy absolutely blows. It was the latter. I cannot name you one memorable play from Cole Strange, and that being good or bad. Like, he was just never on the field in my brain.
Didn't play.
And he sucked. Yeah. So the Cole Strange era has ended in Foxborough. We're on to bigger and better things.
Hopefully.
I got, kind of a co-nuff set. So I got season tickets this year for the Pats, and split it with some family, and we divvied up the games, and lucked out. I got some good weather games. I got week 3 Panthers, week 9 Falcons, which not great games, but it's September 28th, November 2nd. I'll take the weather. Last game of the year, Miami, January 4th. So I'm excited.
Hell yeah, Doc.
Still on baseball season. Excited for Patriots.
Yeah, it'll be fun. My take on the Cole Strange thing is there's busted draft picks. Like, it's one thing to, like, if they pick Drake May at 3 and everyone's like, this is the guy you got to take him, and they take him and it busts. Like Mac Jones. When they took Mac Jones, everyone was saying you got to take Mac Jones. He busted. Like, you're not going to crap on the pick. Like, you can crap on the development, whatever. You're not going to crap on the pick. Yep. It's another thing to be like, everyone else is wrong about this guy. We know about this guy. And for him to completely suck, it's just like a fuck up on top of a fuck up ice cream sundae, if you would. But my nuff said, Pat, you weren't on this one. This was the episode that I did with Sammy from the dungeon, the basement dungeon of the Cape, where I have stashed Isaiah Campbell. Victor Robles threw his bat at the pitcher before that podcast. And the conversation that we had was, when was the last time you saw a guy like literally throw the bat at someone? Not like Manny Machado, where he like kind of fake swung through the bat.
Yeah.
We couldn't think for Wilson Contreras to, I mean, what is it? Has it been about a week and a half since then? And I know he didn't like fling it. He kind of just like tossed and hit his coach, but still, like, you're throwing a bat. Like, you're throwing a bat. Six-game suspension, still, like, Robles got 10, and that feels like nothing. Contreras got 6. That feels like real nothing for what he threw, what was it, gum on the field? He threw the gum on the field? They both threw shit on the field.
Yeah.
That was great. Two epic meltdowns that could have gotten dangerous. Crazy. Crazy to get two of those so close together.
Yeah. It's always weird how, not that it happens a lot, but, like, the thrown bat is, like, 5 to 10 games. And then you'll have like Amir Garrett try and fight the entire Pirates team, and he gets like three.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, I feel like just comparatively, like MLB suspensions are so great. It's so different too because it's 162 games. But for the same reason, you would think it'd be way more. You know what I mean?
Definitely. Like,
guys, I mean, I'm trying to think. Like, Addison in Minnesota. You know what I'm talking about?
Who's Addison in Minnesota?
Vikings.
Oh, Jordan Addison. Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, I think he was either...
I thought it was like
his
car.
No, I thought he was a DUI. I'm pretty sure it was a DUI or speeding. No, speeding. It was. I'm pretty sure it was speeding. Or DUI. One of the two. Anyways.
Something
with a car. Three games.
But that's a huge part of the season.
That's what I'm saying. So you would think throwing it back at you 20 easy.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, guys. There's a double standard when it comes to handing out these punishments. You know what I mean? Wilson Contreras is a big name player for the St. Louis Cardinals, so he's only going to get a slap on the wrist.
But still,
Victor Robles helps with a postseason team in the Mariners, so he only gets 10 games.
I feel like it's a baseball thing, though, because like
it is
because it's a math thing. Like, what's 3 out of 17? Like the equivalent of baseball would be like 20 games, but that's just gonna sound so crazy. Like, holy shit, he got 20 games! Like, and also the fact that they have the rule where it's like you have to play a man down for that period of time. Pat,
so I did the math. So if it was a 3-game suspension in a 17-game season, it is 17.6%. The equivalent of that in MLB terms is 29 games.
Yeah, like see, like do you hear how like harsh that sounds? Like 29 yeah. games, you're gonna sit a month. But that's basically what you're doing in football. Like Addison's basically sitting a month.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
So then what would you guys suspend Contreras for? How many games?
Dude, 15. 15 easy.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, and Robles even more. Like, that was, like, legitimately, he flung the bat yeah. trying to, like, that
Robles.
So you would double, you would double and triple what you give Contreras.
I would give Contreras 15. I'd have given Robles, like, a month.
Like, I'd have given Robles 20, comfortably 20.
Like, think about how different the result would have been if the bat struck the pitcher and he like has brain damage now. Like it's very result based. Like it didn't hit anyone, so he gets 10 games. If it strikes the pitcher and kills him, he's probably banned for life.
Yeah. Yeah. So, agreed.
Just interesting stuff. Go watch the video if you haven't already. It was pretty crazy. I mean, Contreras has been a hothead his whole career. This guy's always doing shit. I got him in the fantasy playoffs. What the fuck, bro? Like, come on. I sound like OJ Simpson when Andrew Luck retired right after he drafted him. Like, what the fuck? But that's going to do it for episode 256 of Playtesty. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Remember to hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts and rate 5 stars. Find us on WEI's YouTube channel. Hit the thumbs up on all of our videos. You can find them in the Playtesty playlist. Find us on the socials at Playtesty on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. For Pat, for Joe producing, it is Gordo here. We got two more games with the Orioles. We will be back in your ears on Friday. So right after the series ends, we will recap those final two games and talk a little bit about what's going on Friday. Hopefully we know a little bit more about who's pitching. But till then, let's get two more. Bayo and Crochet, come on. Let's get a 4-game sweep. 7-1 road trip. It's right in front of you. As Aaron Boone would say, thanks for tuning in. Peace.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.